I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, go, go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Chris Carter, and this is the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We've got a range of topics today. I want to talk with Ray Fittipaldo with the Steelers about Pat Freiermuth, Darnell Washington, Connor Hayward, and how the tight ends could get used in Arthur Smith's offense. But also, we've got NBA draft experts on this show because two Pitt players could be headed to the NBA tonight. And we've got Pirates Talk with Noah Hiles. It's an action-packed episode of the North Shore Drive podcast. Let's get into it.
You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Hosted by Christopher Carter.
Hello and welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter, here with Ray Fittipaldo, one of our great Steelers beat writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. As always, you can find the show in your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoy it. Subscribe to this channel to get all the Monday, Wednesday, Friday episodes of the North Shore Drive podcast, as well as the daily content that comes out from all of our Pittsburgh sports writers here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And as always, this show is brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to Mike's Beer Bar, they have over 500 different available beers, 300 of those local beers. Our beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap. More on Mike's later. Ray, want to talk to you about one of the positions that we've always kind of acknowledged, and the Steelers have certainly invested in a bit to it lately. But it could be a more important position than it has been for the Steelers in Arthur Smith's offense, and that's tight ends. Pat Freiermuth, of course, is in a contract year. There's a lot of skepticism about what if he'll re-sign, how big will that contract be. But this is also a unit with three capable players. A guy, Darnell Washington, who got some starts last year and played a decent amount of snaps, but didn't get a really significant amount of targets. And Connor Hayward, who's kind of been a utility player for the Steelers offense in the past. How do you see this unit being used differently, if they will be, this upcoming season on Arthur Smith's offense?
Yeah, I think the good news, Chris, for the tight ends, if you look back on Arthur Smith's tenure as OC in Tennessee, he used a variety of tight ends, and he used them in different ways. I know the situation was different in Atlanta because he had a number one pick. And, you know, I know he was criticized for maybe not using him enough. But when you have that top guy, I think there's maybe a pressure, to feed that guy a little bit more. You have a guy like that in Pat Freiermuth. But, I think Connor Hayward could potentially have a bigger role if he's on this team. Washington, I don't expect his targets to increase, to be honest with you. I think he's more of your extra tackle, run blocking tight end. And we'll see what happens with Michael Pruitt. You know, if he's on the team, Rodney Williams, if he's on the team, you know, I just rattled off five names. All five of those guys won't be on the 53-man roster, but Arthur Smith does have options. And we've seen in the past that he can be versatile and in his usage of tight ends going back to his days with the Titans.
I think that's the really interesting thing is that this is a very deep group. Like you brought up, Rodney Williams was a training camp darling last year. And like, even when he got in for the Steelers and special teams, like people were talking about, hey, this guy brings it. And I think in a typical time with the Steelers, he would be in the tight end. He would be on the tight end depth chart, but because they've got a guy like Darnell Washington and a guy like Connor Hayward, it's tough for him to make it here. I want to ask you this, because you said you don't think Darnell Washington, I mean, he won't command a whole bunch of targets, but one of the things that the Steelers were, a lot of people thought about the Steelers going into last season was, hey, the one thing that Darnell Washington can give you as a receiving option, if nothing else, is when you're in the red zone, you can line him up and just have him just get a jump ball. That was just never part of the Steelers offense last year. Is that something that you think can help with their red zone problems this year?
Well, I mean, if you do that, Chris, you couldn't line Darnell up really in a traditional tight end role, right? You would have to split him out. I mean, you're talking goal-to-go situations. If you want to split him out and maybe get a mismatch with him, maybe you could do that on the outside. But, you know, jump balls in the middle of the end zone, those are more dangerous plays. You know, tips,
they are.
Interceptions could come into play. So unless you just told him to run to the goalpost and, you know, it's going to be out of the end zone or a catch – that's probably not going to be in their plans. I talked to Darnell early in OTAs, and one of the things he said he wanted to work on was his route running. And he kind of acknowledged that it was an issue, just getting in and out of breaks. He was trying to work on that. So, you know, even though we look back on his combine numbers and they were very good, you know, he's not the most fluid athlete when it comes to getting in and out of breaks and being a smooth route runner. So until he does that, I think his route tree is going to be limited. And you're probably right. You know, he is a guy who's going to get a lot of jump balls and, you know, short passes around the line of scrimmage. And he could be okay in that role. But what did he have, 7 catches last year? I don't know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that his production is going to go way up here in 2024 unless he got much better over the offseason in terms of his route running ability.
Absolutely. I want to talk also more about Pat Freiermuth, because when the Steelers drafted Pat Freiermuth, there was a lot of hope. There was a lot of optimism about what he could develop into. And I think that he's also shown a lot of potential with the Steelers. Now, he's also shown a propensity. He's been injured a few times, and he hasn't been able to stay on the field all the time. But this is a guy who I think that when you look at tight ends in the NFL, he's not in that upper class with Kittle and Kelsey. But I think that he's in that next tier of tight ends where he's like, hey, he can be a dangerous playmaker. He just hasn't been in an offense that's been too conducive to playmaking. And I do think that if Arthur Smith does make an offense that is able to function more consistently, that is better than in the bottom five in the league, looks like the Steelers have had the last few years, I could see Pat Freiermuth putting up some serious numbers and making a strong case to be like, hey, give me a real contract going into next season.
Yeah, I mean, barring injury, Chris, I want to believe in Pat Freiermuth. I go back to his rookie season with Ben Roethlisberger and how much of a red zone weapon he was. 7 touchdowns, most of those coming in the red zone. And then you look at his usage when Matt Canada was the OC. And I know there were some injuries involved there, but, you know, last season was an absolute joke. I mean, there were not targets to him. The first game without Matt Canada, you know, Mike Sullivan and Eddie Faulkner draw it up. Pat Freiermuth has over 100 yards in that game. And I think first pass play of the game or one of the first pass plays of the game, deep shot down the seam, and Freiermuth comes down with it. And, it was like, wow, this guy can actually help your offense, right? I mean, it was a situation where you were like, where was this for the entire season? So, yeah, I'm a big believer in Freiermuth. The injuries are a concern, but I think with an offensive coordinator who knows what he's doing, I think you'll see that production go up. And, it's unfortunate for Pat. He's kind of got to negotiate a contract now before he can really take that next step and put up those big numbers. But I do think the Steelers believe in him enough that he will get a nice contract here before the season. If it's not done before camp, I think that's something that will be done before the season starts.
To your point, and that's that Bengals game, the first game without Matt Canada, he had 11 targets. That was more than the targets that he had in the entire season Or no, excuse me. In most of the season before that, I think he had 13 targets before then. So that's a decent jump up in one game. And again, like we're talking about an offense where the Steelers are lacking a bona fide number two wide receiver. And while Pat Freiermuth won't completely make up for that, using him could be another way to handle that situation. We'll have a lot more things to talk about as the season rolls on. Ray, thanks so much for joining me here. We got to switch topics and get ready for the NBA draft, which is over the next 2 days. And there are two Pitt players who are in the conversation there, primarily Bub Carrington, who has got a green room invite. I talked with two NBA draft experts, Leif Thulin and James Barlow of the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. We're going to talk with them, get their perspectives, and then also talk some Pirates with Noah Heil. Stick here on the North Shore Drive podcast. But first, I want to remind you, this show is also brought to you by Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. When you go to the North Shore, Mike's Beer Bar is right there across the street from PNC Park on Federal Street. You go in there, they have over 500 different available beers. 300 of those beers are from the local Pittsburgh area, and 80 of those local beers are available on tap, and they're always switching new ones in and out, so that you get a new experience every single time. It's Mike's Beer Bar. They have over 20 televisions, so you can catch whatever sporting event that you want. They have amazing food like steak on a stone, where you get your choice cut of steak brought to you on a heated stone. Every time you cut off a piece, you just press that steak into the stone, and you choose how well done you want every single bite of your steak. It's Mike's Beer Bar, the best bar in all of Pittsburgh. Go there today. When you get there, tell them Chris sent you.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go!
With Erlita, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erlita is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erlita may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erlita can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erlita is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erlita.com. CP439267V1.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We now switch topics to the NBA draft. We don't get often to talk about this on the show in here in Pittsburgh, but to take advantage of that, I wanted to invite two of our great guests, friends through the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got Leif Thulin. We've got James Barlow, hosts of the NBA Big Board Draft Podcast. Thanks so much for coming here, guys, and making time here to do this show. You guys do a lot of work on Locked On. You guys have been breaking it down. I listen to you guys talk about Bub Carrington, and right now there's a lot of questions here in Pittsburgh about whether Bub Carrington can make it into like the top 15. A lot of people expect first round, but I've heard you guys talk about how he's kind of risen up draft boards. Can you kind of explain to people what's kind of been behind that happening?
Well, Bub Carrington is a guy that I think became overthought. Early in the year, he put up a triple-double in his first game. He had multiple games where he had 20 to end the season. I think three of his last five, he had over 23 points. And that type of production's rare in general, but especially as a freshman guard that's tall for his position. He's a point guard, and he became overthought because his shooting numbers became worse throughout the season because of his high volume. Well, he goes to the NBA Combine, hits 22 of 25 threes off the – or 22 of 25 off the dribble, and then shot very well from three as well. And I think he eradicated fear of him not being able to shoot in a class that is devoid of good shooters. Like, there are a lot of players with a butt attached to their name. Like, Ron Holland is a good athlete, but he doesn't shoot well. Matas Buzelis, same thing. Stephon Castle, same thing. And Bub Carrington was kind of getting lumped into those discussions as, oh, he's got potential, but he doesn't shoot well, and he's maybe not the athlete that those guys are. Well, he's a big guard who makes other players better, and I think he can actually shoot well. He just had a really difficult role at Pittsburgh, kind of a heliocentric role. And I've got him in my lottery right now, so I'm pretty excited to see where Bub Carrington goes.
What about you, James?
Excuse me. I was a fan. I became a fan, like, early on, and I really like his shot selection as far as the shots that he takes. It's one of the main things that I try to look at when evaluating guys. I know that ultimately you want the ball to go in, but it's what kind of shots are you taking? And, like, his mid-range game that he has in pick and roll is exactly what I like to see from my particular point guards, just because you're not going to be able to get to the basket all the time. Now, I guess, as Lee said, and it became overthought, this is this issue is, does he get to the rim enough? But it's hard to get to the rim in the NBA with size, with length. These are the best athletes in the world. But as far as, like, him going in the top 20, I don't see why he wouldn't. I don't see personally why there's a huge difference between maybe him and Isaiah Kyer, who some people are in favor of. And if you look at it, if Nikola Topic, if you are afraid of his knee injuries, well, Bub has a clean bill of health. So it's like, I could see him going in the top 15, top 20 very easily, just because, like, he projects very well and he does think that you want your point guard to do at the next level.
Absolutely. If he were to get picked in that range, guys, this would be the highest Pitt player drafted since Steven Adams over 10 years ago. So there's a lot of Pitt fans in this city waiting to see if Bub Carrington can do just that. Who are some of the teams that you're looking at that have the biggest need for point guard that would be a great fit for Bub Carrington?
I think Miami would be great for him, especially with just, like, their timeline. I know Jimmy Butler is 35 right now, and usually Pat Riley is trying to get you out before it's too late. And I'm not saying that, you know, there are rumors that Jimmy Butler does get traded, but regardless, like, they're going to need some young talent. And Rozier, I think he's got on the back end of his contract too, so I really like him in Miami. I think he would work in Milwaukee if he does fall that far, even Orlando. I know that they, you know, have gone guard, seems like the past 4 or 5 years, but he does fit the mold as he's big and he rebounds and he can play two positions.
Yeah.
What about you, Leaf?
Yeah, I'm with him there. I don't know exactly which team kind of 10 through 15 takes him, but I think that's the range because people are intrigued by just the sheer size at position, which is becoming more and more prevalent in the NBA. And then the fact that he can do a lot of things, like he handled an enormous workload at Pitt and he was able to make his teammates better and score. And it may not have been the most effective, but he was able to score and he scored and he passed and he played well against good competition. I think that matters a lot. So I think he goes somewhere between 8 and 15. I think 8's the absolute high side. I don't think he would go to the Spurs. I'm just kind of laying out a range. Yeah. But that's where I see. I think the Heat would be a good pick. I think him or Collier is likely their pick if one of the two are available.
Now, there's been a lot of talk about. Oh, go ahead, James.
Sorry, I like him in Cleveland too. If they move on from Garland and they keep Donovan Mitchell, I think that's a good pairing because then you still have size in the backcourt because Donovan is 6'1", but like he would be able to complement Donovan. Where if you don't feel like Bub is your lead guard, he can be a complimentary backcourt guy too. So I really like him there, but some dominoes have to fall first for them to even make that move.
Right. Sorry, they pick it, I believe, 20th. No, you're fine. I pray that we're here to get you all's insights. You guys study the NBA draft. I'm just a visitor in this department. I wanted to ask you guys, when it comes to this class, there's been a lot of talk about how this isn't a great class, quote unquote. This isn't as you know, top heavy or as deep as past classes. Where does Bub rank as far as point guards in this class? Like, if you were to list like your top five, is he in the top five? And if he is, where is he? If he's not, how far down is he?
Go ahead, Leaf. I'm thinking.
Yeah, I think the way I'd rank it is, and we said this on a podcast not too long ago. It depends how you qualify point guard, honestly. So I think you have Dillingham, Topich, and then if Castle counts as a point guard, those three are better, in my opinion. The issue with Nikola Topich is he has a torn ACL, and I don't think he's that much ahead in the draft boards than Carrington. And then a lot of people will say Reed Sheppard. We talked about this on a podcast recently. I think Bub Carrington is a better point guard than Reed Sheppard, and I want to emphasize point guard. Like, what Reed Sheppard does excellently is he shoots the ball as a catch and shoot guy. He only shot 4 threes the entire season off of the dribble. Bub Carrington shot a ton, off of the dribble around a screen. And Bub Carrington works around screens excellently. That's what being a point guard is. It's pick and roll basketball. He's also bigger, and he's more adept at playing the point guard position. So I would rank him fourth, especially if Castle is counted as a point guard. I would say Castle, Topich, and Dillingham. And I wouldn't be surprised if Carrington ends up having a more fruitful career than Dillingham, because I've said this before. I love Rob Dillingham and what he does. I think his individual skills might be among the best in terms of he might be the best scorer in this class. But I don't see a team winning with him as a high volume scorer. It's just too hard to win if one guy has all the ball in his hands and he scores and he doesn't play defense. Like, Trae Young's an excellent player, absolutely phenomenal. I don't think Rob Dillingham's that. And Trae Young has these warts that are picked on all the time because he's such an inept defender. So I think he's fourth for me, but there's a world in which he overachieves and gets higher than that. And speaking of Bub Carrington.
What about you, James?
I agree with Leaf. Like, it starts with how you define point guard. So I don't think Stephon Castle is a point guard, but he'll have the ball in his hands the majority if the shooting does pan out. And even then, he's like a playmaking wing to me. A lot of point guard is who you guard as much as it's your role on offense. But again, like you said, as far as regardless of how you rank them, who in this draft navigates screens as well as Bub Carrington? Topich, maybe, right? But as far as like passing, playmaking, live ball reads, live ball dribbles, live ball passing, like, he is at the top. And that is what, to me, NBA scouts should be like knocking down his door for, because he does the things that we know will translate. And the jump shot, I think he's a better shooter than what the numbers will showcase. And as far as like him getting to the rim, it's not because he's just not a bad athlete. He just, you know, he's 18. He needs to sharpen his skills. When I was scouting him before, trying to do some research, he didn't play point guard on his AAU team. And so ultimately, like, if he played point guard in high school, sometimes playing point guard in high school means you're just the best player on the team. Like, it could be right. The 6'8 guy playing point guard. So, but he is just advanced in particular for somebody who didn't have the fanfare of some of these other guys. And he ended up, like, you know, making that Pitt team competitive. So, like, I really, really like him.
I hear you on that. I want to switch topics real quick to get your thoughts on Blake Henson before we move on to the next segment here. But Blake Henson is a guy who electrified Pitt basketball for the last 2 years, set the 3-point record, stood on the table at Duke. But, you know, he's been the guy. He's also been a leader. Like, he was a guy who, back when Pitt lost to Missouri and many people thought this team was going to fall off a cliff, he was the one that said to all of us in the meeting, like, hey, watch out for Bub Carrington and Jalen Lowe, because they're coming. Get them now while they're figuring it out. And as soon as they figured out, they're going to be problems. And then they did, and they became one of the better teams in the ACC this past year. But what is the outlook for Blake Henson? There's a lot of skepticism if he'll even get drafted, but there's not a lot of skepticism about him having a chance to make the league through maybe the G League or other ways.
I think Blake Henson's the type of player that will make the NBA because his traits that are positives are pretty strongly correlated positives. He shoots the ball well. He He's got a big frame. Now the question is, how does he defend in the NBA? What position does he primarily play? Like, there are questions, and that's probably why he's not going to get drafted. But I think they're ones that you can answer in time, because he can shoot the ball and his body's big. And I also think he's a pretty good ball handler. Like, he puts the ball on the floor and makes a smart decisions. They're not necessarily flashy and they're not numerically eye popping, but he makes smart decisions, makes the team better. And like you said, he seemed to have, and you'd know better about the leader qualities, but he seemed to have a calming presence on Pitt the last few years, especially before Bob Carrington, in which he carried an enormous workload. So I do think he'll make the league. I think he can be a guy who plays kind of as a floor spacer who can defend versatily, not necessarily amazingly, but versatily for two positions.
Look, I don't know if he's going to get drafted, but I tell you what, I will pick him up from the airport if he were to sign with the Mavs somehow. Because if you put him in a pick and roll situation, even if it's not even a screen, it could just be a little ghost screen with like Luka, he's going to make and take open shots. Like, he reminds me of the guy that used to pair in Houston during Harden's prime, where he stood in the corner, couldn't leave. He shot threes 3 feet behind the three-point line. Like, all of that stuff translates. So his route to the NBA may not be the conventional drafted, but he's going to play well in the G League if he does decide to go to the G League. And if he does get an opportunity, it's just going to come down to him making shots. And I am a believer in him being a shot maker. But like Lee said, it's going to be who does he defend at the next level. But like guys like that, like floor spacers, like that's a premium right there. And like I said, if somehow the Mavs were like, hey, we're going to bring him in, like he can give me at least 10 minutes, you know, in the playoffs, at least stretch the floor. Because ultimately, like those teams that don't have five guys that can shoot, pass, and dribble, like you need high-level role players, and he just projects to be a high-level role player if he can defend at the next level.
Absolutely. Guys, thanks so much for joining me here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You have been listening to or watching on YouTube Lee Thulin, James Barlow. They are both hosts on the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, where you all year long, you guys can give great analysis on the NBA draft, preparing people for this big moment. You guys got a lot to cover, so I'll let you guys get to that. Do tune into their podcast the same way you get these podcasts on your favorite podcasting app and on YouTube. We're going to switch to talk about the Pirates a little bit. We got my man Noah Hiles. He's been keeping track of them while they're on their road stand. But first, before we get into that, I want to remind you this show is also sponsored by Moon Township Honda. You can go to Moon Township Honda at 5802 University Boulevard in Moon Township, Pennsylvania. MoonHonda.com is their website. Here's another word from them.
To build the Honda CR-V hybrid, we took everything you love about the CR-V and kicked it up a notch with greater power for a CR-V unlike any before. Adventure confidently with Honda, Car and Driver's most awarded brand in 10 best history, the CR-V and CR-V Hybrid, part of the Honda line of rugged vehicles. Visit your local Honda dealer where new vehicles are arriving daily. Buy online or reserve from select Honda dealers.
We're back here on the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We switched topics from the NBA draft to Noah Hiles, my guy here. He's been covering the Pirates beat like nobody else. Him and Andrew Destin on an amazing team. But Noah, want to talk to you about the Buccos. I also want to talk to you about Mitch Keller. He's 9-4 after the Pirates 9-5 win against the Reds. And we've talked a lot about Paul Skeens, talked a lot about Jared Jones. But is it understated how good of a season Mitch Keller is having right now for the Pirates?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's not understated to those in the clubhouse,
right?
Those on the team. And I even think those who cover the team day to day are able to appreciate what's happening. But yeah, from the outside, I mean, the stories, it's Paul Skeens, it's Jared Jones, it's the Hundo Boys or the Allegheny Electric Company, whatever nickname you want to give them. But I mean, Keller's been better than he was last year. I mean, and there's no denying it. He's been arguably, aside from Skeens, maybe the best pitcher in the National League since the month of April. I mean, when you look at the numbers and just how consistent he's been, how I will even say dominant he's been. He was one drop fly ball away from Michael A. Taylor last night from another quality start. So, I mean, this guy's just coming out, and he's been every bit of what you would hope a starting pitcher would be after getting the largest extension in franchise history. He's consistent. And I think the value that Mitch Keller provides, yeah, you see it on the mound with great production, but you also see it in the clubhouse. He's the leader of this staff, maybe even the leader of this team. And he's not a super vocal rah-rah guy, but his just chill, even-kill personality keeps everybody else relaxed. And, you know, he's been through some trials and tribulations. It wasn't just instant success for him when he came up, like we're seeing with these other rookie pitchers now. He really had to grind and go through adversity to reach this point in his career. And I think because of that comes some wisdom that's helping him on and off the field right now.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at his career wins and starts. He didn't get a winning record as a pitcher until last year when he had 13 wins and 9 losses. But I wanted to throw in, of course, also, I wanted to ask you because Mitch Keller, you know, talking about young leaders on this team and guys who are becoming that, what is his demeanor like? Like you're as an interviewer, what kind of insights can you give into what kind of a person he is around the clubhouse and the energy he gives off?
He's the chillest dude in the world. I mean, he's just someone who's very down to earth, relaxed. He's your typical Midwest neighbor. I would put it that way. Like you'll walk by him, he'll want to talk some golf with you, you know, and he also happens to throw a 98-mile-per-hour fastball. Like that's just kind of it. I mean, he's always been, you know, very approachable. Just from what I've heard and just past encounters with him and everything, he's just a guy that I think that helps when you have two quote unquote alpha males in this pitching rotation with Jones and Skeens. It helps to not have, you know, an ace of the staff that's also overbearing with confidence and swagger, that he can just kind of be like, all right, guys, hey, welcome to the big leagues. And he keeps things light. My favorite thing he does with this team right now, a lot of people know Paul Skeens doesn't watch the game when he's pitching. When the Pirates are hitting, he just goes and stands in the hallway in the club behind the clubhouse in the at PNC Park. And there's a rule on the team that he has to give Mitch Keller a smile before going into the locker room or the hallway or wherever he goes. And just stuff like that, he keeps it loose. Where as intense as a guy like Paul can get, you'll always see it. If you watch him going off the mound, he's always like looking for Mitch and gives him like a wink and a smile, which has become a huge meme. That's what the story behind that meme is, because he has to give Mitch his smile or his high five before heading into the tunnel. And just small stuff like that, it seems silly, but keeping those rookies grounded and saying, you know what, like they can look at him and say, this is an all-star. This is a guy who is making $77 million. This is a guy who I want to be where he's at when I'm in my late 20s. And look at his approach to the game. He doesn't have, like, he works his rear end off, but he's able to have fun and just keep it chill. That's a good thing to aspire for, too.
Absolutely. Well, the Buckles are back on the mound at 1:10 p.m. today against the Reds to finish out that series. You'll be on the road covering them against the Braves in Atlanta, where those rookie pitchers or those young pitchers will be going up against the Braves. Can you talk about the matchups that you expect to see there and the fireworks we might see against a team like the Braves?
Yeah, the projected matchups online are a little off. But this is still a very interesting pitching series. So Friday, I would assume that Martin Perez would make his return.
Okay.
So we're going to see Perez Friday, I would think, and then which means Saturday would be Jones, and Sunday would be Skeens. Now, my question is this another time where with Skeens scheduled to pitch on a Sunday, on a getaway day, do they go with a bullpen game and then push him back a day just to give him an extra, you know, keep this progression plan along? But I would think that you would want him to pitch against the Atlanta Braves because the Atlanta Braves are really good. And that's a tough lineup to go up against. So, I mean, that's the big story here, though, is how do they manage their pitching staff for this upcoming series with Martin Perez coming back? You get your fifth starter back. Do you get some extra length by going with another bullpen game on Saturday or Sunday? And if not, I mean, we're looking at some interesting matchups. I mean, Max Fried scheduled to pitch this weekend for Atlanta. He's one of the better pitchers in the National League. And based off of how the schedule works, he'll be going up against either Jared Jones or Paul Skeens. I mean, that is as good as it gets as far as a 1-2 matchup. So, if that's against Jones, that's another great test for him because he's already pitched against guys like Tyler Glasnow. earlier this season. If it's against Skeens, that's probably the best opposing pitcher he's faced this season. So that's something that I have my eye on, is A, how the Pirates pitching staff is scheduled to go to work this weekend, and B, who they get matched up against. Because, you know, Skeens versus Freed or Jones versus Freed, either one of those matchups is kind of must-see TV right now.
Absolutely. The All-Star game is just weeks away, July 16th. Who are the Pirates that you think have a legitimate shot to be in the All-Star game? Because there's a lot of big names this year that people are talking about.
I mean, Skeens has got to be in. Right. It's just, to me, there's no – he is, I would say, probably aside from Ohtani and maybe Aaron Judge, the most relevant name in baseball right now. I just don't – like, when you look at social media trends, mm-hmm. when you look at – I mean, his baseball card's number one selling in the world right now. It's just everyone wants a piece of Paul Skeens. The, you know, ever like that clip of him striking out Ohtani and then Ohtani homering off him. I mean, that reached society circles that go way past just Pittsburgh baseball fans. So I don't see a world where he's not an all-star at this point, just because it's what the game would want. MLB mm-hmm. wants, it's a showcase of talent. And what more talent could you ask for than that guy? But there's a couple of other guys I think could sneak in there. I mean, Mitch Keller is having like I said, he's having a better season than last year, and he was an all-star last year. So I could see Mitch Keller getting in. And then another guy is Brian Reynolds, who's had a fantastic month of June. He's up to 280 with the batting average now, OPS well over 800, 40-plus runs batted in, 13 home runs. I mean, if this continues, and I think a thing that's going in Brian Reynolds' corner is, look at the rest of the stats from National League outfielders. There's not a lot of good ones this year. In recent years, we've seen some of the best outfielders in baseball move to the infield. Bryce Harper, Mookie Betts, just a couple of guys who fall into that category. And so because of some of the bigger names, and then other guys going to the American League, guy like Juan Soto. So because of that, there just aren't a lot of great numbers right now from National League outfielders. And with what Reynolds has been doing, I don't think he's out of the mix either. So I would circle those three names right now: Skeens, Keller, and Reynolds.
That's I think those are three great names right there to be able to be considered for the All-Star game. Brian Reynolds right now top 10 in outfielder on base percentage, OPS, and average, everything going well for him there. He's Noah Hiles of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Get all his great coverage with Andrew Destin on the Pittsburgh Pirates by going to post-gazette.com. Noah, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you. We'll talk to you when you're in Atlanta. We get some perspective on what's going on with that series there. Thanks again for tuning into the North Shore Drive podcast. Also, thanks to Ray Fittipato, Leif Thulin, and James Barlow for all of their contributions to this show. We're back Friday talking about, we'll get some results on the NBA draft, as well as another look at the Pirates as they're getting started in Atlanta and all things else here on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We'll see you then. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all the sports coverage from the Post-Gazette that we have to offer, visit post-gazette.com.
I've got prostate cancer, but I really wanted to make it to the big game with my grandson. And here we are. Go, 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 go!
With Erleada, apalutamide, being there is possible. Erleada is a prescription medicine used to treat prostate cancer that has spread to other parts of the body and still responds to a medical or surgical treatment that lowers testosterone. Erleada may cause serious side effects, including heart disease, stroke, or severe skin reactions, which can lead to death, falls, fractures, and seizure. Seek immediate medical attention if you experience symptoms of a stroke or severe rash. Erleada can cause harm to or loss of an unborn baby. Common side effects were fatigue, joint pain, rash, decreased appetite, weight loss, high blood pressure, hot flash, and diarrhea. Ask your doctor if Erleada is right for you. Or tap this ad to visit Erleada.com. CP43-9267-V1.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at NetCredit.com/partners. NetCredit. Credit to the people.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.